BMC Racing en 38-46, 38 minutes 46, meilleur temps pour BMC Racing. And as a finish, best time for BMC Racing in 38 minutes 46. 38 minutes 46 seconds, best provisional time for BMC Racing.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with RAFA. From grand tours to group rides, to Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, RAFA exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Cholet.
Well, we were played in there by the voice of Seb Piquet, a familiar voice, but I was standing by one of the motorbikes at the finish today, and race radio was coming through there, and I happened to be passing just as BMC were crossing the line, so I was able to capture there the voice of Seb Piquet, the official race radio at the Tour de France, declaring BMC to be the fastest team so far, and that was a result that stood the test of time. Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Cholet, outside the delightful Kyriad Hotel, one of the town's high
premier
spots.
Premier tourist attractions, I think.
But a hotel whose restaurant came to your rescue last night, Francois.
It did. It did indeed. I was staying, can I name the place? Yes, I can. I was staying in the Campanile, you know, it's a kind of chain restaurant, like motel. And when I got there last night at 10:05, the memories of France, for some of you maybe, I was told the kitchen was closed and I couldn't have any dinner. So, you know, my English friends, it doesn't happen only to you. It also happens to the locals. But so, and the lady told me, oh, but you've got a great Burger King up the road along the cemetery. So I started...
Burger King by the cemetery. It doesn't get more glamorous than that.
So I started walking towards the cemetery when all of a sudden I spotted the place where we are now. It's another chain hotel called Kyriad. And Wanty Group Gobert was staying there. And there was a delightful young woman called Jessica, I think, and I asked her, is it possible to save my life and, you know, give me something to eat? And I finally had the Wanty Group Gobert menu, which was, could I say, just average, but it saved my life.
Well, really? It propelled them to a very impressive 21st today in the team time trial, just 2 minutes 24 down.
Penultimate team. The only team worse than them was Cofidis.
It's probably the Popiette, you know.
And I think, Lionel, you rode the team time trial course this morning with Tom Carey of the Telegraph. I believe you went a little bit quicker than Cofidis.
No, I wouldn't say that publicly for people to hear. That was just a small joke between us. But no, you're right. We did get up and went and rode the course, and it suddenly came back to me. I've ridden more or less the same course before, 10 years ago, when there was an individual time trial here in Cholet on more or less the same course. It was slightly shorter that day. Today they did a little detour off the country road to take in a small climb past some houses, and it was about maybe 5 or 6 kilometres longer today. But it was a typical rolling country fair. The wind was blowing a bit when we rode, it was a course that offered risk and reward, I think, and we saw that from the results.
Well, let's hear the results. Let's hear your tale of the attack, please.
Okay, stage three from Cholet to Cholet, 35.5 kilometres, a team time trial, and BMC Racing, the pre-race favourites, they won. An impressive performance that has catapulted Greg Van Avermaet into the yellow jersey for the first time since his stage win at Le Lyon 2 years ago. BMC, Team Sky, Quickstep Floors and Mitchelton Scott were the first four. Team Sunweb was fifth. Team EF Education First was sixth. And I suppose the surprise result was a disappointing performance by Movistar, who lost 53 seconds to BMC, which means that Nairo Quintana has made up no ground whatsoever, and we would have expected him to do that a bit today. But Movistar, well, looking at the splits, they went out too hard and paid for it at the end, whereas BMC, Team Sky, Quickstep and Mitchelton Scott really got the pacing spot on. And you've got to include Sunweb in that, because they all within 11 seconds of one another.
So Sunweb, I think, were quite fast finishers, so they seem to get it pretty much right.
Yeah. So Van Avermaet in yellow, Peter Sagan is now back in the green jersey. He's already got a healthy lead, 104 points over Fernando Gaviria's 78. Dion Smith is still in the polka dot jersey. He's tied on 1 point with Kevin Ludanois. That will probably change tomorrow. And the white jersey is now on the shoulders of Sunweb's Soren Krau Andersen.
Whoa.
That has been verified by the pronunciation police, and until lots of people tweet me to say I got it hopelessly wrong. But that was my best effort at that.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world, and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Their support helps us to be here bringing these daily episodes. We're very grateful to them. We will, of course, be presenting Pedaleur de Charme later in the week, presenting one lucky rider with one of the coveted Pedaleur de Charme t-shirts. T-shirts, jerseys, caps, all available at rafa.cc. But we will be looking for nominations for Pedaleur de Charme, so please get them coming in. Are there any early contenders? Peter Sagan, a few people have suggested him just for various acts of generosity and kindness towards spectators, handing them dropped sunglasses and generally being a good egg.
How will he wear the Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt?
He's got enough, hasn't he?
He's got so many other jerseys that he needs to wear.
That's the one missing on, you know, in his collection.
It's the one missing
on
his collection, actually. Yeah. He's never won Pedaleur de Charme. It's the one he
probably, if he knew about it, would absolutely be after it.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, Lionel. Yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt. So listen, we lost you today, Francois, but as we debuted last night, the Francois French flavour, a flavour of France with Francois, however you want to say it. What can you tell us about where we are now?
Well, especially about where we are now, we are about 200 metres from the police station, which is very important, because 20 years ago, the same police station, Bruno Roussel, the head of Festina, was taken to custody, or as we say, was held for questioning, and this led to the old Festina scandal to unfold in many ways, because that's in that police station that Bruno Roussel said, yes, there is organized doping in Festina. So, I mean, you know, all these 20 years of doping turmoil started 200 meters from where we stand.
Yeah.
maybe not the best French flavor you want to hear about. Another story about Cholet, the local specialty is handkerchiefs. And you know why? Because, I mean, it has to do a little bit with the polka dot jersey you'll see in a minute. I told you last night about the counter-revolutionaries called the Chouans, the local rebels, and one of their generals went to battle with white handkerchiefs on his chest, on his hat, and on his belly, so that his troops could follow him better. But actually, what it did was, with these white handkerchiefs, the enemies could actually aim at the handkerchiefs, and he was actually shot at several times. And so the white handkerchiefs were all, you know, sparkle with
polka
blood.
Dot.
Yeah. Polka dot
all over the place. Oh. And this is why to this day in Cholet they make white and red handkerchiefs. That was the French flavor of the day, which once again was a very flavory one.
Oh, the polka dot handkerchiefs of death.
Oh dear.
Well, interesting stuff. As was the team time trial, Rich. Now, one thing I meant to mention in my tale of the attack there was just to clear up why the start order was so peculiar, front-loaded with all of the strong teams setting off first. Mitchelton Scott were first, Sky were very early starters, so were Movistar. Well, the reason for that was because the order was decided by the general teams classification, not the general classification of individual riders, but the teams classification, with one exception, and that was to put Peter Sagan's Bora Hansgrohe team off last, because he was in the yellow jersey. So what we had was quite an unusual team time trial, in which most of the action was in the early part of the stage. Mitchelton Scott set a very good time, and only three teams managed to beat that. Team Sky, one of the other early starters, Did beat that, of course, and BMC. And so it was kind of a topsy-turvy old day, really. All the interest was in the early half.
Well, there was the right amount of suspense thanks to Quickstep. They were starting, I think, just anti-penultimate or something. And it's a word I never thought I would use, but there you are. And Quickstep were really challenging BMC until the last stretch, when and there was a chance for Philippe Gilbert to take the yellow jersey, but they missed out, probably because there were only four of them left at that stage: Alaphilippe, Lampard, Jungels, and Gilbert.
Well, yeah, the general classification now has kind of it's got quite a team flavour to it, because Van Avermaet is leading. He's wearing the yellow jersey, but he's level on time with TJ Van Garderen, his BMC Racing teammate. Team Sky's Geraint Thomas is third. He's kind of the only one on his own, because after that, three Quickstep riders, Gilbert, Jungels and Alaphilippe, and then three Sunweb riders, Dumoulin, Crow Anderson and Michael Matthews. Rigoberto Urán rounds out the top 10. So really, you look at that, Urán, Dumoulin, Thomas, TJ Van Garderen even, will consider that a very good day.
Oh, it's amazing how often those four teams finish in the first four in these team time trials. It's just incredible. Sky, BMC, Quickstep and Michelin Scott, they are so dominant, really. And Team Sunweb, the world champions. I'm trying to think of a rider who had a really bad day today who can joke that the crying baby you can maybe hear in the background is that rider, but nobody springs to mind. But those teams have really turned it into an art form, and no one more than BMC. I mean, their record in this discipline is really phenomenal.
Yeah, they won the seven of the last 11 world tour level team time trials. An interesting stat. Oddly enough, Team Sky have yet to win a team time trial on the tour.
On the tour, they do. They have a kind of mixed record. We'll hear from Geraint Thomas a bit later, who argues that they've been pretty consistent, but they haven't had that win, which is surprising. And I think a lot of people expected it this year, because they had on paper what looked like the strongest team. And it is amazing. It always amazes me that the riders change, identities of the riders change, and yet the team, there's something in the team and the approach that they have to this discipline that brings out.
That not so much of a challenge for BMC, because five of the eight riders who won today won the team time trial in 2015.
Fair enough.
On the tour. So, consistency is also a rule.
There's some consistency there. I spoke at the finish to their time trial coach, Marco Pinotti, who won some team time trials himself in his days as a rider. And he's always an interesting guy to speak to. I also saw Manuel Quinziato, the former BMC rider who was part of many successful team time trial teams. We'll hear briefly from him. He's now a rider agent. I spoke to him at greater length, which we'll maybe hear at some future date. But Quinziato on BMC's record in team time trials. And then we'll hear from their time trial coach, Marco Pinotti.
They can still do that without me.
They can do it without you. We've seen this so often from BMC, we don't know if they're going to win, but they're so good at this discipline, no matter what the lineup is. What is the secret to that success?
We train. We do train. I think that till 2014 in Ponferrada, we almost never won a team time trial with a team. Like in the previous 6 years of the team, we never won one, except maybe one with Giulio Trentino. And there, that day, also with the help of Dario Broccardo, the new coach that entered, that he was really focused on time trial, and then Marco Pinotti, we found a perfect combination for that world championship, and we won it. And winning it, it motivated all the riders, and we just started training. Like every team camp in December, in January, we were doing at least two or three times a week training on that, and we got better and better, and that's the secret. At the end, team time trial is really a lot about how you race, because very often, look at the World Championship last year, not often the best, the really strongest team wins. The win the team that raced better.
Marco, looking at this with your coach's head on, how did that ride compare to other rides? Were you happy with the performance watching it from the car?
I think it's, I knew from experience 3 years ago this was close. So, and I said at the beginning, the strongest team on paper is Sky. But, we make up this with our work. And on the paper, they have, the best lineup. Maybe they had some bad luck in the first stages with the crash of Bernal. And so I knew it was close. I knew Quickstep in the final, maybe the condition, so they held them a little bit. They are a consistent, more average team because they don't have a GC rider, so a good lead out. Somewhere they were closing in Swiss, 22nd, without Dumoulin, so I was expecting them to be very competitive. And the Mikaton as well, they bring a team, but also they've been a little bit unlucky. And so I think it is one of the most, I would say, you know, as close as a world championship, winning this event. And get the jersey was not the first. The main goal was to gain time. Winning, I have confidence in the guys, but you know, rationally I would say it's difficult to win. But say, I believe in these guys, and they give me back whatever my beliefs.
It was quite a technical course, and a few teams seem to have got their pacing wrong, the strategy wrong, and a few teams also lost quite a few riders. Was it the sort of course where you had to be prepared to lose riders?
Yeah, because when we did the recon on Wednesday, the condition of the wind were a little different. This morning I realized immediately, you know, that the wind was a lot stronger, so we changed a little bit the strategy to have, a more gradual start and be there in the final. I think that was, you can see this from the time split. Still other team, they did a very strong final. The final was maybe equal for those guys, but we made a difference maybe where we kept eight guys on the long stretch road from kilometer 18 to 25 when you still have eight riders.
Is there a key rider? I mean, often they talk in team time trials about there being a kind of captain on the road. You've got, you know, from Stefan Kung as a time trial specialist to Richie Port, Greg Van Avermaet. Is there a key guy in this lineup?
I think probably Kung is the name that, you know, stand out as a motor of the team. But at this age, Paddy Bedin was also really good. Van Gaderen was also really good. Greg had the motivation. Everybody is as you know, you've seen the only baby one is a lineup of this team of Dauphiné. We lost 35 seconds from a team like Sky with basically this team without Froome. I think everybody in this discipline is well prepared. They know that they know a lot of the technique, and then they give always a little bit extra than they would do by an individual time trial.
And a great boost for the team. Any news on the team? Do you know, have any insight into the future of the team?
We are confident. I am confident in what Ochovic is doing, is working, and but you have to ask him directly to have a good answer.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Beta Fuel, the new superfuel from Science in Sport, is a 2-to-1 maltodextrin to fructose isotonic drink that delivers 80 grams of carbohydrates per serving without upsetting your stomach. This formulation means your stomach can process more carbohydrates per hour than glucose alone would allow. And this could make all the difference to your ride, whether you're cresting the Alpe d'Huez or just crossing the line at your local Sportive. Available on scienceinsport.com from July the 12th.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yes, thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. We are very grateful to them, and they are, of course, still offering 25% off all their products at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. Make sure you stock up on various hydration products in this hot weather, which carries on, and it was absolutely stifling today around Cholet at the team time trial, which is perhaps it can be quite a bit cooler in this part of the world, and we're going up to Brittany in the next couple of days, and the weather there can be pretty unpredictable.
But yeah, hopefully. I mean, you know, there's an old joke about Brittany. I mean, you know, a guy could go into Brittany, goes in a village and talks to a young guy, a young kid, it's raining, and he asks the young kid, is it always raining like this here? And the young kid says, I don't know, I'm only 8.
excellent. Yeah. We'll talk about the big losers, I think, in the team time trial in the next part, but there were some other winners, I suppose, if we look at the finish sheet. Team EF Education First, I think, a great result for them. They were sixth on the stage. One of their main men for this event was Lawson Craddock, who's been riding with a broken scapula, not a broken clavicle, as I said last night, one or two of you pointed out. Sneaked in a corrections corner there. but they rode really well, and Lawson Craddock and his battle to Carry On is actually the feature of our Kilometre Zero episode tomorrow. We'll hear from him and lots of people around him, including the medical team who've been patching him up and making sure he can carry on. But six for them on the day is extremely good. 35 seconds down, overall 31 seconds conceded to Team Sky. They were cock-a-hoop with that, and Rigoberto Urán is very well placed overall.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, they would have possibly been vulnerable in that stage. I mean, I know they've got a lot of firepower in there with, you know, Taylor Finney and, you know, but Craddock compromised because of his injury. So Urán in the top 10, you know, if you're looking at kind of a virtual GC and the tour, really, I mean, TJ Van Garderen has got top 10 potential, but not a winner, we wouldn't think, not with Richie Port on the same team. Geraint Thomas, you know, again, is in a similar position to Van Garderen in a way, because Chris Froome is obviously the number one at Team Sky. Bob Jungels is in a great position already. Dumoulin's in a great position, and then Urán. So he really is right there. He's made some, you know, small but important gains over several riders, and you know, he'll be delighted to be in that position at this stage. I'm absolutely sure, especially with the likes of Port and Froome jumping up a few places today.
Yeah, you can always almost, you know, ask yourself whether, as we mentioned and we suggested, there is not a kind of, you know, team culture of team time trial, because Team Garmin in the old, I think it was, were one of the four teams in the race now who won a team time trial on the tour before. With Garmin, I think it was way back
2011.
It was not far from here. It was at Les Césars. It was their first Tour de France stage win of that team's history.
And we probably all remember 2009 when they finished very close second to Astana with Lance Armstrong. And that was an amazing ride, really, because they, again, then, as they did have today, they had riders injured and struggling to hang on, and they were down to the bare minimum five for a lot of the stage. It was funny today with the new teams down to eight riders from nine, there's now a minimum of four. Well, the time is taken on the fourth man across the line, and it was funny to see teams shedding as many riders as did. I asked Marco Pinotti about that. One little point on BMC, while I remember, I asked Quinziato about the future of the team as well, and he said that he thinks there'll be news within the next week on the team. We understand that Jim Mokovits, who runs the team, had a meeting on Monday.
Sunday.
Yeah. I don't know what day it is. Sunday. And I'm not sure where that was, but it was with an entity who were looking not just to take over sponsorship, but to take over ownership of the team, apparently. So he says there'll be news on the team in the next week. We expect it to carry on, but scaled down and perhaps without Richie Port.
Looking at the
results still, going up above EF Education First, Team Sunweb, very solid performance from them, pretty fast finishing. And Dumoulin is, you know, flying below the radar, hasn't put a foot wrong so far, is going well, clearly. And the big question is, has he recovered from the Giro? I spoke to him at the finish. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, we did an awesome job, I think. The boys were amazing. And actually, last year at the team time trial at the Worlds, nobody really suited up like I'm the strongest. And that was the same case today. There was not much difference, and that's exactly what you want, and that's what we did perfectly today, and we're really happy with this result. Next couple of days is just about keeping out of trouble again, like last 2 days, and doing every day we can to get some results, but also to stay safe for GC. So so far it's been working out really well.
How do you feel, Tom, after the Giro? It was a very hard Giro. Do you feel you're fully recovered?
So far, so good, yeah. But you never know in the second half. I have no idea. I never did two Grand Tours, but so far I'm feeling good.
Yeah, Dumoulin and Team Sunweb very much part of that top five of teams who had a great day. The other one that had a great day was Mitchelton Scott. Adam Yates of course, crashed and lost a bit of time on the first day. He was in the same group as Port and Froome after those crashes on the first stage. And this would be Adam Yates's kind of Achilles heel, really, time trialing on a real strongman's kind of course. Having ridden it, obviously not at the same level as these guys, but it was one...
Don't be so modest, Lionel.
It was one where they were potentially into the red very early, out of Cholet from the start line, up a considerable drag, and then kind of force flat and rolling, very, very fast course at times. And I gather that Mitchelton Scott thought a lot about today when picking their eight-man team for the tour. As you look at the lineup that Mitchelton Scott has brought, they've really brought a squad to get Adam Yates through the first week up to the basically get him to Roubaix safely, and then leave him to take care of the mountains. I mean, obviously he's got Mikel Nieve and you know, some of the other riders. They're not slouches on the climbs, but this is a real kind of rouleurs squad. But Matt White told me a little story about their team time trial at Tirreno Adriatico back in March. Is it on a sea front, Lido di Camaiore? If not, it's basically dead flat. It's sort of 57, 58 kilometre an hour average. And before that stage, Adam Yates was wanting to do turns and be part of the seven-man team. And Matt White said, no, look, you don't do turns. Just do a little bit when you can. But we don't want you blowing up. The idea is to get you to the finish as quickly as possible. You don't necessarily have to contribute to that. This is not your day. And, of course, being an elite athlete, they don't want to do that. They want to be in the mix. But what happened in that stage was that, I mean, look at the diesels that were in that lineup: Durbridge, MP Hepburn, Bauer, Mezjek, who was also in that squad. Basically, Yates did a turn, and when he came back down the line, he was within an ace of missing the wheel. And Matt White said that at that speed, when you're getting near to 60 kilometres an hour on the absolute flat, Adam Yates being light as a feather, if he doesn't get on the wheel immediately, you know, the gap could open in a split second and he could be in trouble. And that was a bit of a kind of wake up to Yates. And so today's strategy was that Yates basically did one turn in the first 4 kilometres and then sat on with Mikel Nieve and didn't do anything, but then did a little bit more in maybe the last 7 or 8 kilometres.
He sprinted to the line, actually. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it was striking to see the different strategies within the team. Mitchelton Scott, they obviously told Adam Yates and Mikel Nieve to sit back while the big guys were doing the job. And you had other teams. Team Sunweb were extremely consistent. I think the 8 of them crossed the line together, sort of. I mean, they were the most probably compact of them all. Team Sky were very compact at first in the first half, but then they lost Luke Rowe along the way because we know about his, you know, his injury problems. They lost Wout Poels as well along the way, which was a little bit more surprising. And then you had teams like Quickstep, who finished with only 4 guys, and obviously they decided to go full gas, and the ones who got dropped, you know, got dropped. So there were various approaches to this team time trial. And when you see the result with, you know, 5 or 6 teams within 11 seconds, well, finally all the tactics were worthwhile.
It's a bit like golf in that the aim is to get the ball around the course in as few shots as possible. It doesn't necessarily, you know, you can choose club selection and, I'm thinking Daniel Freeb's with us talking about golf. But there's a parallel there. You don't have to ride the team time trial the same way. It's about looking at the strengths of your 8 riders. And as Matt White said to me, it's actually more about looking at the weaknesses of your 8 riders and taking those into account more than the strength, because there will be times on the course where the real strong guys have to dial it back a bit and aren't riding at the absolute maximum that they might be able to, but they have to think about and look after their teammates. And particularly when you've got a golden teammate like Adam Yates, you've got to get him round as quickly as possible, not put him in trouble.
But we saw Bernard, for instance, take turns. But bearing in mind that he is the Colombian time trial champion, but you know, it was quite surprising when you saw Yates sit back and Nieve and Bernard taking turns.
It was. I mean, it's a fascinating discipline, isn't it? It is like a chain where the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And it, you know, looking at that team, as you say, the Mitchelton Scott team in particular, they are all big guys and big rulers, and Nieve and Yates really did stand out in that lineup, and yeah, having them sit on is the most sensible approach, giving them an armchair ride to the finish if you can. And it worked. I mean, I think given the less than perfect build-up they've had to this stage with Impey and Durbridge having heavy falls yesterday, they'll be pretty pleased with that. They'll be pretty happy to finish within 10 seconds of the winners. Team Sky, as you mentioned, surprisingly Wout Poels, you know, conceding over 4 minutes. He rode the Giro as well, of course, but that's a surprise. Castroviejo there, Spanish time trial specialist, he was also tailed off a little bit, but not much. I mean, he was there pretty much the whole race. And
yeah, but he was giving it absolutely everything.
He rode really well
for the team, and then dropping off.
Probably the main dropout of the day was Peter Sagan. I mean, he was actually, you know, he lost contact with the team after 25 Ks.
Yeah.
So which was quite surprising in a way. So maybe he realized early on that he wouldn't keep the yellow jersey and decided to relax because he has other goals, winning stages, fight for the green jersey. But on the finish line, he said he was kind of tired, and he had a bad day. He's Peter Sagan, so I thought
this is the one thing he can do.
Yeah, maybe. My impression was that in the last 10Ks, he spent the last 10K thinking of the one-liner or the nice little quote he would give, because he told all the TV guys in the mix zone. He said, "Well, yeah, I had a bad day. I lost the yellow jersey, but you know, it's not Sunday every day," which was. Obviously, he was very proud of himself.
Is that a twist on an old Morrissey song there that he's...
who knows?
Yeah, you know, subliminal Morrissey references in his interviews. Peter Sagan, he's capable of anything. Team Sky, I spoke to Geraint Thomas at the finish. Geraint Thomas, another one like Tom Dumoulin, who's had a stress-free, trouble-free first few days and is you know, looking good. Here's what he had to say at the finish after the team time trial.
Narrowly down on BMC at the moment, but how did you feel the ride went?
Yeah, decent. I think we sort of rode well as a team and got it all out collectively. For me, felt good, and just a bit, every time I seemed to hit the front was on the faster section, so you're kind of doing shorter turns and kind of felt like I could have got a bit more out. But that was a bit frustrating. But yeah, I think altogether we rode well, and especially with... There's a lot going on there, you know, it was quite technical, even though it wasn't many corners, you know, it was changing the direction, the wind and the climbs and the descents and everything, so yeah, I think we rode decent.
How were the conditions? Because a lot of teams seem to be losing men. I mean, you more or less held it together, a couple of guys dropped off, but how tough was it with the wind and stuff as well?
Yeah, it's always changing direction, so you're always sort of like, and there's a bit gusty and, you know, there's a bit flicks in the line or whatever, and obviously it's not just one gradient either, you know, it's always up or down, and so you're having to really sort of change your turns depending on where you are on the course. So I think it certainly favors the teams that can ride well technically, and you know, they're quite even as well, so I think it was decent for us. But like I say, just a bit frustrating. It felt like I could add a bit more in the tank by the end. But
the Sky do seem, something seems to click this year for Team Sky and Team Time Trials. Is that your feeling as well, that and is it a result of doing anything differently?
I don't think so. I think it's always been decent when I've been, well, not saying it's because of me, but every TTT I've done, we've always sort of been there or thereabouts. Obviously there's been a few in some Grand Tours when we haven't necessarily had our strongest team, has been a bit sub, you know, what you'd expect, but I think every time we've done it in the Tour, we've been in the top three, I think, three or four. So yeah, I think we've always sort of been there or thereabouts anyway, but I think sometimes it just hasn't had the best sort of lineup.
So we heard there from Geraint Thomas, Team Sky. The losers, today's losers, I mean, Movistar, an obvious example. They came in with three leaders, really four if you include Marc Soler. It was pretty much just those guys left at the finish, along with Andre Amador. They finished with five and conceded 53 seconds. So the advantage that Landa gained over, and Valverde gained over Chris Froome and Richie Porte on Saturday on stage one, was almost wiped out in the case of Froome, and was wiped out in the case of Porte today.
Yeah, and Quintana makes up nothing. I mean, a bad result for them. Richard, you reminded me of Alex Dowsett talking about Movistar and their kind of get up and ride it type attitude.
We played a couple of weeks ago with Alex Dowsett on the Movistar approach to team time trials. Yeah.
He used to ride for them, of course, and almost the opposite, really, of what I heard from Matt White about how Mitcherton Scott had kind of plotted their way round this course with one goal in mind. And, you know, maybe Movistar paid there for having... I mean, that is a strong team on any course. I mean, they really should be, and have in the past, been right up in the top two, three, four places in team time trials. So it's a surprise result that they did so
especially poorly today. As we saw Landa struggling halfway. I mean, the astonishing thing, Movistar are always puzzling in terms of strategy, but maybe that's what Alex Dowsett was saying, is that, you know, you have the impression they don't have a strategy, they have a philosophy, which is not exactly the same thing. And so that there's no kind of planning, but when you look at the course, the last bit was quite bumpy, and so obviously better for riders like Quintana, Landa, and all. But we have the impression that they did so much hard work in the first part that they lost momentum in the second, and Movistar don't cease to be astonishing, puzzling for us, you know, seen from the outside. In the mountains, you're always waiting for them to attack, and never do. They kind of never do. Every time there's an echelon, you can be sure they'll be at the back. And you have an impression they never seem to correct that. It's not part of their philosophy or their culture. And maybe you have the impression that they're riding on intuition or they improvise a little bit. And, well, from time to time, that's what you get.
I'm just curious to know, Francois, what does a struggling Mikel Landa look like? Because we were joking about it.
Just the same as... we've had a little gag in the car, haven't we, Rich? So Mikel Landa's facial expression doesn't change. You could have, you know, Mikel Landa winning the lottery looks exactly the same as Mikel Landa quitting the Tour de France.
It actually came to me when we were at his team hotel the other day, and I saw him having lunch. And as I watched him eat lunch, it occurred to me that his facial expression was exactly the same as when he was climbing Périgueux last year.
Pouring olive oil on salad, he looks exactly the same as climbing one of the steepest mountains.
450 watts on a mountain. you said Lionel Landa winning the lottery face. Someone needs to sort of do some kind of Photoshop
There'll be a meme before the morning, I'm sure. But the thing about Movistar is they've got this... we're in World Cup week. We're not mentioning football, but...
Never.
They're quartet reminds me of the Le Carrière Magique. Soler is the young pretender to be included in that group. We haven't seen enough of him at this level yet, although, you know, winning Paris-Nice at his stage of his career is impressive enough. But they, you know, they lack the ability to stick the ball in the net. You know, they've got everything going for them.
The Carrière Magique were playing together, and they had Platini, scoring the goals. The problem with the Movistar, they seem to be, they're very good at playing, you know, at kicking the ball around and keeping it. But in the end, they always, you know, fall short of scoring. Yeah. So that's a problem.
Just to explain, Le Carrière Magique was the magic square, was the four-man midfield that France had when they won the European Championships in 1984. And that's one of the big conundrums for any team, isn't it? How do you persuade riders of... similar abilities to align behind one goal? What's the point of finishing, I don't know, second, fifth and ninth, which they possibly could, when they have the potential to actually win the Tour de France? But they've not got off to a great start, and no. It's only 3 days in.
Maybe we should ask, you know, Spanish cycling expert Fran Reyes, because I was with Fran last night, actually, and we had this discussion, and he offered an explanation, and I'd be... You know, I'd be glad if we could some time during the tour hear his explanation, because I didn't understand a word of it.
Was it a bit quick for you, Francois?
We'll
definitely get him on. A couple more losers, I suppose. Lotto NL Jumbo felt they got their strategy wrong, the pacing wrong. They started too conservatively, too slow, they felt. And they've lost quite a lot of time. 1:15 down, 13th team. That's a bit of a blow to Primoz Roglic, who we've been looking forward to seeing how he gets on here. Not a good performance. Just ahead of them, AG2R. I don't think they're losers. 1:15 down as well.
This is the great kind of the contradiction of a team time trial, isn't it? Yeah. Lotto NL Jumbo and AG2R have lost exactly the same amount of time to BMC, but one is, I think, a decent performance, and one is a little bit of a surprise. I think AG2R will be happy-ish.
Yeah, very happy about it. Romain Bardet at the finish said that really worked at it, that improved at it. They're good, you know, specialists of this kind of effort with Sylvain Dillier and Pierre Latour. Pierre Latour turns out to be exceptional. This young guy we know is one of the hopefuls of cycling. We've seen him a little bit as a climber in the last couple of years, and he actually won the French time trial title, and he was very, very instrumental in making sure he didn't lose a lot of time. And Bardet was really, really relieved and happy about this effort. And he said something interesting, because he was one of the GC leaders who didn't lose any time on day one. And so he was asked about it again, and he said, "I don't want to say, you know, that others like Chris Froome lost time on that day, because I respect my rivals. The time is only won on riders, you know, on the bike in the mountains and not on crashes." I mean, which was pretty, you know, nice from
looking a little bit ahead. But Bardet, I mean, that was the first big obstacle for him, and if he can get through the second on the cobbles Sunday, he can really start to think about growing into the Tour as a potential winner rather than just a podium potential. And looking at their squad, I mean, he's got Oliver Naarsen and Sylvain Dillier, cobbled experts. Dillier second in Paris-Roubaix, of course, this year. Naarsen seems to be in the break every time in Belgium. They've picked a smart squad here, AG2R. They've actually, without having a huge budget, managed to put together a team that looks like it's all aligned behind this one goal, and it's an improvement on previous years.
It's very interesting the way they're actually improving every year, adding an element to the puzzle. They're working a little bit like Team Sunweb did to lead Dumoulin to finally win the Giro every year. And it's tricky these days with only eight, you know, riders on the Grand Tours. And I think Vincent Avenue, their manager, managed to find the right balance. And my impression as well. I mean, I talked to Bardet a little bit on the phone, as you could hear yesterday. He himself improves every year. It makes it a little bit, you know, just a, you know, the little detail that's improving gradually. And, you know, I would never say he's a leading contender for winning the Tour, because he has his flaws. But if circumstances, you know, turn his way, well, why not?
Well, why not indeed?
Shall we leave it there, chaps? One other loser we should mention, Team UAE, Emirates, Dan Martin's team. They were behind Lotto NL Jumbo. Lost 1:38.
About par, though, I'd say for
them.
Well,
because they've had a poor season.
They've never,
so far.
I mean, in their short time, they've never been terribly good, and they are the sort of the remnants of the old Lamprey team. So, your great point, Richard, about team time trialing being in the DNA of not just the riders, but the staff and the whole kind of expectation that this is what we're good at. I don't think it exists at UAE, really.
Yeah. And I think the team time trial is that we talk a lot about the planning and the thought and the detail behind a lot of performances in cycling these days. And I think those teams that are very, really well organised in that regard are rewarded in the team time trial, aren't they? Mm-hmm. BMC, Sky, Quickstep, Mitchelton, Scott, Sunweb. You know, those are probably the five. And maybe throw EF Education First in there as well. They are the teams that appear to
Astana from time to time, you know, do well. There's another one, GC contender, whose performances so far remain totally impossible to decipher, and that's Vincenzo Nibali.
I forgot about him completely. Wow. Yeah, I mean, they were, again, probably par 11th, 106 down.
I think that's a pretty good performance for them, actually.
Not bad. Just behind Movistar, not bad. I mean, they've got quite a strong team here. The Izaguirre brothers, both strong riders, strong time trialists. Really,
if you'd said before
climbers.
That Nibali would only lose 13 seconds to Quintana in the team time trial, you'd think, blimey, Bahrain have pulled out an absolute worldie of a ride. But, so they'll probably look at the results and say, well, it's gone better for them than it might have done.
One thing I remember from the Vuelta last year was Chris Froome talking about stage three into Andorra and making that really hard with Gianni Moscon and so on, in order to try and put Nibali in trouble, because he said Nibali is notoriously a slow starter in Grand Tours. And if you're going to take advantage of any lacking condition or form or whatever he might have. You really have to do that in the first few days. Having said that, of course, when he won the Tour in 2014, he won stage two, and then he performed very well in the cobbles. But nevertheless, that's the exception that proves the rule. He is somebody who we tend to see riding very strongly in the third week of a Grand Tour. So still a long way to go. Shall we leave it there?
Maybe looking ahead quickly to the next few stages. Greg Van Avermaet is in yellow, and with the cobbles looming at the end of next week, and other tricky stages along the way.
They're not going to be tricky for him.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He could keep the yellow jersey for a long time.
Yeah,
because until Annecy,
he can have an Annecy. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's go and find Burger King beside the cemetery somewhere. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Rowley.